ugly and wet. The striations might have been a little weird because of the megastructure's rotation, but then again, maybe not. I wasn't a weather expert, and my interest in cloud formations had always been limited to staying out from under the wet ones. I examined the horizon in several directions. I thought it might be lighter to the west, but generally speaking, we were socked in all directions. So, large weather systems? Check. I frowned. I could have done without this particular reproduction of a planetary environment.
Look at this, Bridget said.
I turned. I hadn't realized she'd activated yet. She was pointing at some underbrush that had been crushed flat.
I think we revisited overnight. Something big. Maybe a La Roche.
I searched my memory. La Roche was kind of a big wolf, but with claws like a grizzly bear. It grasped its prey and held it while it tore off chunks. Not a fun date, for sure. Why didn't our AMIs alert us?
I don't think it displayed any interest, Bob. The track doesn't actually come into our nest. I think lack of odor and body heat threw it off. A night hunter isn't going to be depending on sight, so the fact we only look like a meal probably wasn't enough.
I grimaced. Glad that we had Bridget along to pay attention to this kind of thing. On Eden, my introduction to the local ecosystem had been gradual, and mostly from the safety of orbit. Now, I was in the middle of it, and I hadn't yet internalized the studies. Bill and Garfield sat up at that moment. Garfield looked at my face and Bridget's face and said, "What did I miss?" Bridget laughed.
"Let's see about breakfast."
"Fish on the hoof? No thanks," I replied. "I'll eat in town. Maybe a good Denver omelet with some hot sauce."
"Sure, we'll get right on that."
Bridget prairie-dogged and scanned the river.
"Do we want to just float today, or should we put some hustle on?"
"As much as this feels like a vacation," I replied, "it isn't. Let's get ourselves to a town." It took most of the day to find the next town, even with the group actively swimming downstream. With no witnesses to worry about, we were able to pile on the speed and ignore fatigue warnings, and in the water there was no danger of overheating the manis. Bill spotted the town first. "Coming up on the left, guys. Slow to flank speed."
"Don't get pedantic, Gar."
"Slow to whatever is normal for a Quinlan, okay?" I smiled to myself. Bill and Garfield sniped at each other constantly, but it was never heated. Marvin and I had the same kind of interaction. I realized it had been a long time since I'd visited him. I didn't even know if he was still working his way through all the fictional environments we'd read about. Maybe it was time to get over myself and rejoin Bobiverse society, while there still was one. We swam up to the docks and climbed up the ramp in the acceptable manner, best not attract attention. The plaque at the head of the dock said Galen Town and included some helpful arrows to useful locations. We noted an arrow that said Market and headed in that direction. We still hadn't worked out any kind of concrete plan since we didn't even have enough information to form one. The Skippies were still listening in with the spy drones, but they hadn't come up with anything new. It wasn't surprising when you looked at the big picture. We still hadn't come close to scanning the entire structure in detail. And even with the surprisingly large Quinlan population numbers, they were spread quite thin. Every single town couldn't possibly have a significant presence, and we still needed to figure out what that might be. "Let's try not to screw it up this time," I said.
"Excuse me?" Bill exclaimed. "Who was it that started a riot last time? Anyone? Anyone?"
Picky. "Seriously. Maybe we can make some headway today. You guys want to split up?"
"I think we have to, Bob. We'll cover more territory."
I nodded, gave a small wave, Quinlan style, and headed in a random direction. The point was to eavesdrop on conversations and maybe try to start one and probe subtly for information. I had my concerns about that subtly part. I was far more familiar with the art of war than the art of conversation. But where can you go where everybody knows you're... No, but close. Liquor loosens lips, or muzzles, or beaks, or haora, as the Quinlans called their cake holes, so where would I find a pub and or boozery? I went up to the first person who was holding still. Excuse me, is there a tavern nearby?
Yes. My brother-in-law owns the Growling Guppy. Down that lane, turn right at the house with the red door. You'll see it. Tell them Gren sent you.
I nodded my thanks and set off in the indicated direction. I was pretty sure Gren got a kickback of some kind, and I didn't begrudge him. I might even get a break on the first beer. Brother-in-law wasn't quite the right translation for the relationship, I knew. The Quinlans had a complicated family system, but I got the impression that Gren and his pub-owning mate were on pretty close terms. I arrived at the establishment in short order. It was, as advertised, easy to pick out. An outside patio with long benches and tables featured a lot of Quinlans holding beer steins. It seemed every hour was happy hour for Quinlans. Was swimming while under the influence a felony? I sidled up to the bar and signaled for attention. To the barkeep, I said, "Gren tells me I can get a beer here?" The barkeep eyed me closely, probably checking his memory. Then he grabbed a stein, filled it, and set it down.
"First one's one copper. After that, two coppers."
I pulled out the appropriate coin, set it on the bar, and grabbed my beer. I had a bad feeling this was not going to compare favorably with Howard's red ales. Well, I could always turn off my taste buds. I scanned the tables. I was looking for a spot where I was potentially within earshot of several conversations. I needed to have a much better picture of this society before I'd be ready to dive in and strike up a conversation, especially after last time. I plunked my butt down on a bench and hunched over my stein, trying to look like it was the center of my universe. Then I turned up my audio gain and relaxed into creepy eavesdropper mode.
"Can't believe that Ginny wants to bring that fish entrail-brained loser into the family."
"So he says to me, Barrow, he says, I've got a right mind to... That's just too funny. The guy really thought..."
"Claims to have been scattered twice. I mean, what are the chances?"
"Wait, scattered?" There was that word. The Skippies hadn't been able to nail it down beyond that it was something bad. This could be important. I filtered out the other conversations. First voice.
"Probably a troublemaker. You can get caught up in a scattering once by chance, but twice, no. Skeeve had to be involved in whatever was going on."
Second voice.
"So if he starts up the same shenanigans here, our whole town could end up scattered."
Third voice.
"But that's not fair. Why would we all suffer?"
First voice.
"Fair isn't part of the administrator's vocabulary, youngling. If they decide we've contravened the limits, they will act."
Third voice.
"How do we stop that from happening?"
First voice.
"We can't stop the administrator. But... we can prevent Skeeve from brewing more trouble and causing a scattering in our home."
Second voice.
"What do you have in mind, Errol? Talk to him? Make him listen to reason?"
A laugh from first voice.
"Sure, that'll work. Or maybe he just ends up as fish food."
Second voice.
"I'm in."
Third voice.
"I've never killed anyone, but I can't lose my family. I'm in."
First voice.
"Good people. So, I'd invite him here for a beer or dinner to discuss things. Get him a little tipsy, make him think we're on his side, then invite him to my place and take care of business."
A pause.
"You guys have to be convincing, though. He has to believe we're ready to buy into his crazy ideas."
I turned a casual eye in the direction of the voices. Two Quinlans were nodding as a third Quinlan glared at both of them in turn. Those were my marks. Their conversation drifted off into more mundane subjects without shedding any more light on Skeeve's sins or the nature of the administrator. I could hear the capital letter when they said it. Literally, the Quinlan language included an inflection to indicate proper names. I listened for a while longer until I'd finished my, beverage? It was every bit as bad as I'd expected, but no other interesting conversations offered themselves. "You guys discover anything?" I said over the intercom.
I hoped I had kept the triumph out of my voice.
No, but it sounds like you have,
Bridget replied, dashing my hopes.
But at least I found a good hotel meet at the dock.
Everyone signaled their agreement, and I set off for the rendezvous. Okay, Bob. Spill. What did you get? Garfield asked. Let's get a room and shut down, I replied. I'll go over it back in Vert. We made our way to the hotel that Bridget had found, negotiated with the proprietor, and in short order found ourselves in another small bunk room. Someday we should try moving up the social ladder. I'd like to actually have room to turn around without elbowing someone, Bill said. Why? Garfield replied. We're just racking the Mannies here. What are you planning on doing? Bill glared at him but didn't reply. We picked bunks and lay down, then deactivated. I popped into my library and was just settling myself into my lazy boy when the others arrived. Their favorite furniture was ready for them, since this was a long-term project and they'd be here a lot. Jeeves brought beverages, Spike picked a random lap to colonize, and we settled in. All right, here's what I overheard. I queued up the conversation from the tavern and played it back. When it was done, there were several milliseconds of silence. Garfield was the first to speak. So, scattering. Does it chase off the miscreants? It's a little more than that, I think, Bill said. There was talk of collateral damage. Our whole town could end up scattered, he said. So, the administrator, whoever he is... It, Bill said, interrupting Garfield. The speaker definitely used a third-person indeterminate, or maybe they. The Quinlan language doesn't differentiate between singular and plural for this declension. Okay, whoever they are. They scatter a town if people get uppity. How, I wonder? And what defines uppity? We have to get to Skeeve before the hit squad does their dirty work, I said, interrupting Bill and Garfield's discussion. Ideas? Let's just be waiting at the tavern, Bill said. Yum, I replied. More swill. I played with my fish soup, trying to pretend I was eating. Bill and Garfield were doing slightly better, and Bridget had tucked into it like a native biologist. Jeez. We were beginning to get worried after several hours of waiting. The barkeep was eyeing us since we weren't drinking enough to pay for the seats. Garfield had finally had enough. We need to consider the possibility that they changed their plans. Do we know what other taverns are around this area? Bridget leaned over and poked a neighbor with a finger.
Hey, friend, how many other taverns within walking distance?
He turned with a frown, but his expression changed when he took in her three friends. Apparently deciding on courtesy as a tactic, he mentioned two other locations and gave us general directions. I'd given the others a video image of our targets, so Bill and Garfield hurried off to check the other bars. Meanwhile, I bought our neighbor a beer for his trouble, and he became considerably friendlier, if a little perplexed. I've got them, Garfield said. They're just leaving the Prancing Pralia. I guess they must have changed plans. We're lucky we didn't wait any longer. Stay with them, Gar, I replied. We've got you on pings. We'll get there as soon as we can. Bridget and I leaped up and sprinted for the door as protestations and curses followed us. A text from Bill indicated he was on the way as well. It was tempting to apply non-biological levels of speed, but that would have raised questions that would have required us to leave town and might alert the administrator if they had a properly functioning intelligence-gathering network. Garfield waited at the entrance to an alley as we pulled up. Bill was still on his way. Traffic jam, he said. I'll be a while longer. How do you get a traffic jam in a horse and buggy world? I muttered.
Maybe start a riot by peeking in the back of a wagon,
Bridget muttered back. I make one mistake. We can't wait for Bill, Garfield said. They're significantly ahead of us. We rushed down the alley in single file. There was no sign of anyone, but there were also no alternative paths unless our subjects had suddenly developed the ability to climb walls. I had a momentary image of Spider Beaver in red and blue tights and gave myself a mental slap. Then I heard Garfield chanting, Spider Pig, and grinned. Bob is Bob, always and forever. As we rounded a corner in hot pursuit, several figures leaped out of nowhere and tackled us. Our computer reactions were fast enough for us to realize what was happening, but unfortunately, The Mannies operated in physical reality where inertia was a thing.
We couldn't do more than start to turn in the direction of the attacks before we were all flattened. The old Mannies would have been too heavy to knock over, but the new models had appropriate mass for the subject species, so I found myself on my back looking up at a very angry Quinlan in the middle of bringing a knife down on me. It was time to abandon any pretense of being bio. I pushed up faster than the knife was coming down, and the Quinlan went airborne with an oof. I smacked him on the side of the head as he hit the top of his trajectory and sprang to my feet. If I'd calculated the force properly, he'd be stunned for a minute or two, but not injured. Two more Quinlans flew backward, and my friends climbed to their feet. Bridget had been stabbed. Fake Manny blood was oozing out of a wound in her shoulder. And she looked pissed. I mean, really pissed. I considered for a moment whether I'd have to protect our attackers from her. Garfield pointed farther down the alley. Something going on. Without waiting for a response, he sprinted in that direction, or, well, waddled quickly. I examined our erstwhile ambushers. All three were in various stages of stunned, and there was no fight left. "You okay?" I said to Bridget. She nodded, still scowling. The internal nanites were doing their job, and the blood flow had already stopped. In another minute, there would be no sign of the wound, and even the fur would have grown back. We build well in the Bobiverse. The sounds of battle drifted back to us from the direction Garfield had disappeared. After a glance to make sure there was no further danger here, I went down on all fours and galloped off after him, Bridget right behind me. When I got to the scene of the excitement, I found Garfield beating one Quinlan using another Quinlan as a bludgeon. It had a definite cartoon feel to it, and I stopped dead for a moment to watch. It was also physically impossible for a Quinlan, so there was a good chance that Gar had blown our cover. "Ixnay with the Superman act, okay?" I exclaimed. Garfield stopped, abashed, and dropped his bludgeon. The other Quinlan keeled over slowly, like an inflated Santa when the blower is turned off. "Do you think this was about Skeeve?" I asked via intercom. Garfield replied out loud. "I think that's who they were attacking." He motioned with his head. "He took off down that way. He's injured." I nodded and headed in the indicated direction. I found a Quinlan leaning against a wall trying to block blood flow from multiple wounds. He kept moving his hands from one wound to the next, muttering under his breath. I suspected shock. "Skeeve?" I asked, and he nodded. I quickly removed my backpack and extracted my first aid supplies. It was mostly bandages, but that was exactly what he needed. It took only moments to fix him up well enough that he'd at least live to get to a doctor. As I finished up, Garfield and Bridget joined us. I took one of Skeeve's arms and Bridget the other, and we hoisted him to his feet.
"Thanks," he said. "Are you with the Resistance?"
I opened my mouth to reply just as Skeeve's eyes went wide in surprise, and then I found myself face down on the ground. I could see, out of the corner of my eye, Bridget going down as well, with two Quinlans piling on. Yet another individual stepped up, pulled something that looked very much like a handgun, and shot Garfield point blank.
22. Living in Interesting Times. Bob, July 2334, Galen Town. Garfield glanced down at his chest, then snarled and grabbed the gun from his attacker. I didn't have time to be surprised. My passengers might have knives. I did an explosive push-up and two Quinlans went flying. I heard noises that indicated Bridget might be doing the same, so I concentrated on my own problems. One of Bridget's attackers landed sort of on me as I was getting to my feet. I grabbed him by a handful of fur and applied a head slap. It seemed to be effective as a combat technique overall. I just hoped I wasn't giving them concussions or something. Bridget and Garfield had taken care of the other Quinlans, Garfield having used the gun as a club. That seemed overly dangerous, but I had enough sense to realize that lecturing him on it at this point probably wouldn't go over well. We turned as one to check on Skeeve to find him nowhere in sight. Some blood drops indicated which way he'd gone, and some of them had been stepped on, so he had company, but Were they rescuing him or kidnapping him? Garfield peered back up the alley to the location of our first battle.
The first group is still there, he said, looking kind of out of it, so this was a different group and only interested in Skeeve. This feels like a rescue.
Bridget and I checked ourselves for stab wounds, then Bridget examined Garfield's chest closely.
No bullet wound. Was he shooting blanks?
No, there was definitely an impact, Garfield replied, but nothing like a bullet. At least, not like I'd imagine a bullet to feel like. I've got internal nanites checking it out right now.
What the hell are you people up to? Bill asked over comms.
Lots and lots of shenanigans, Bridget replied. Not all of our own making.
She motioned to the blood drops on the ground.
Let's follow them. Maybe we'll learn something.
I'll follow, I said. You guys go around to the street. I think they'll try to get out of the alley as quickly as possible. They need to get Skeeve to a doctor, assuming they're rescuers and not kidnappers.
Skeeve was still bleeding, as the occasional blood splatter plainly showed. It made tracking easier, at least until the blood trail ended at a closed door.
What the hell?
I frowned at the door. There was nothing special about it, and the pattern of blood drops didn't seem to indicate any kind of struggle. I tried the door. It was locked and felt solid. Guys, see if you can find the front of the building to the west of my current location, I said. Skeeve and his companions went in there, I think voluntarily, since the blood trail is clean.
Got it, Garfield replied.
It took about 2 minutes with me standing in the alley looking suspicious as hell. I tried leaning casually against the far wall, but that just made me think of West Side Story, and probably looked even more suspicious, if anyone was watching. At this point, if the administrator had eyes on this whole fiasco, we were definitely blown. I wondered if some version of drones would come swooping in to grab us.
We're here, Bridget said. It's a hotel. No way to pin anyone down. They could have just gone straight through and out the front door.
Shit. This outcome deserved an expletive. We'd lost our first legitimate lead and attracted attention to ourselves at the same time. No question the second group of thugs would remember Super Gar when they recovered their wits. Probably the third group as well. Taking a bullet and just getting angry would look very Terminator-like.
Time to bug out?
Let's meet at the third pub, I said. The old gator. Bill, you good?
Yeah, no prob. I'll be there before you guys. Go the long way around. This snarl-up is still a mess.
Garfield took a long pull in his beer. I leaned forward and watched for any streams of liquid pouring out of his chest. He caught the direction of my gaze and snorted, almost losing a mouthful. We'd brought Bill up to date on our adventures. Now I hoisted my own glass as Bill described the traffic jam. It really did sound like someone had just started a fight and it had gotten out of control, exactly like what had happened to me. Definitely anger management issues. It would make for an interesting civilization. The beer was kind of growing on me, unlike the fish soup. I wondered if I should record a batch for Howard. Maybe he could adapt it for humans, or, worst case, we'd just keep it in the Bobiverse. Garfield put his stein down and held out his hand to show a small item. Flechette. It seems to have the consistency of dried gummy bear. I dipped it in some water and it dissolved a bit. I bet it's some kind of drug.
Unfortunately, our nanites can't do chem analysis.
Bridget poked the item with a finger.
But I imagine you're right. Probably a tranquilizer. If they wanted to kill someone, a bullet would be easier. Or a knife.
Where's the gun? Bill asked. Gar made a small head motion. In my pack. I took a quick look at it. It has a magazine in the handle that feeds flechettes. This one was mostly empty, and an air cylinder for propulsion. It even looks like it could be pumped up to recharge. It's good tech.
So was that group, administration, do you think?
Bill shook his head.
My money's on the resistance.
The tranquilizer gun strikes me as something the administration would be more likely to have.
Well, they did have one. I mean, they'd all have them.
And the guns would be full. This feels more like one stolen gun. He paused and frowned.
Bob, Skeeve asked you if you were from the Resistance. Did he sound scared? About us being resistance? Not really, no. Bill nodded. So he was probably with the resistance in the first place and had been trying to get back in touch with them after his scattering. I think the third group was resistance and was there to rescue Skeeve, and we got in the way. Whether they thought we were with the locals who were trying to kill him, or maybe that we were administration, they stepped in, jumped us, and rescued him. But if we were administration, wouldn't we have guns? True. So I'm going with thought we were locals. I still think that hotel wasn't random, Garfield said. They aren't going to leave a back door open. I bet they had a knock or something. Do you want to stake it out? I asked. We could keep an eye on the place for a while. Maybe Skeeve will show up again. Then we go in and trash the place? Bill asked with a grin. Bridget rolled her eyes. Okay, I know you're not being serious, but it's still worth a reminder that we can't do anything superhuman. She glared at Garfield. Or at least, nothing else superhuman. We want to find out about them, not the other way around. Yeah, I added. The locals might not be able to take us on, but if the administrator gets wind of us, well, they certainly have better tech and probably can throw superior numbers at us. One thing I do not want to do is get captured and disassembled. Garfield nodded. So we can't go in like a SWAT team. That also means we'll have to avoid direct confrontations. You'd think being a bunch of space-faring computers would have more of an upside. He grinned at us and got some chuckles in reply.
We don't have any choice, though, do we?
Bridget said.
This is the first real lead we've gotten. Even if we're still thrashing around, at least our area of focus is better defined. A lot.
Garfield sighed. Also a good point. Okay, I will try to figure out a way to keep an eye on the hotel.
Barney's place,
Bridget said. Seriously?
Barney?
She smiled.
Almost. The native name sounds very similar. I knew it would be the first thing that came to mind, especially considering the infantile Bob sense of humor.
And yet you went straight there, I replied.
I think perhaps it's catching.
Bridget looked alarmed, and Garfield and Bill started chanting, One of us! One of us!
Oh, shut up!
Bridget was silent for a moment, thinking.
Anyway, if Gar is taking care of the hotel, I guess the rest of us should just go back to looking around. Can we get some kind of search pattern or something?
Excellent idea. I'll see if I can get a close scan of the town and ask Hugh to grid it out for us. Bill groomed his fur in thought.
Also, if Skeeve was injured, he'd have to go to a doctor or hospital or something. Maybe we can figure out something along those lines?
I'll look into that,
Bridget said. She gazed at me.
Which leaves you, oh fearless leader.
I'm going to sit here and drink, I replied, raising my tankard.
In your dreams, Beaver Boy, find us a new place to stay, a little closer to Barney's. How about that? And tomorrow maybe we can finally locate that library I keep talking about.
I grinned back at her. Fearless leader, my furry ass. There were several hotels in the area, this block being Hotel Row. I picked one at random, paid in advance for a week, and collected the key. I didn't like the way the proprietor leered at my money pocket as I meted out the proper coinage. We'd have to make a point of leaving nothing of value in our room. Got us a room, I messaged to the others and attached directions and an image. Great, Bill replied. I've made arrangements with Hugh to get the town scanned. Unfortunately, moving the drone and doing a detailed scan will use up its remaining heat sink capacity, so he'll have to fly it out and bring in a replacement. He's grumbling about setting the project behind schedule. Like there's an actual schedule. I think the Skippies are just OCD.
As opposed to the rest of you,
Bridget observed. No one chose to reply. The others would be a half hour or so getting home, so I took the time to look around our new digs. This room was somewhat bigger than our previous residences, having just about enough room to swing an actual cat with everyone present. Palatial. The ceiling, as with most buildings, was just open rafters. Of course, the climate was mild, and Quinlan's came with fur, so insulation was not a major consideration. I eyed the rafters until I spotted a good location, not big enough to hide something valuable, therefore unlikely to be of interest to a burglar. I placed my hand in front of my face, palm down, and opened my mouth. A 1-inch roamer marched out onto the back of my hand. If anyone was watching, that would probably give them nightmares for life. I reached up and the roamer climbed from my hand onto the nearest beam, then made its way to the hiding place. The 1-incher was about the smallest model that would have optics suitable for surveillance. Otherwise, I'd have gone with nanites. If someone cased the joint while we were gone, I just wanted to know. I didn't want to scare them half to death. Well, okay, maybe a little bit. Bad Bob. I was considering popping back into Vert while I waited for the others when I received a comm from Bridget.
Bad news, guys. I tracked down Skeeve.
This is bad?
Sorry, Bill. He left. Got to a dock and got patched up. He was gone by the time I got there.
I sighed, but only in person, not over the intercom. Okay, let's meet at our favorite pub. I locked the door to our apartment after leaving instructions with the roamer. The growling guppy was less than 5 minutes away. I got there first and grabbed a table. The barkeep glared at me as I parked my butt, probably remembering our parsimonious spending habits. I couldn't afford to stand out like that, so I signaled him for 4 brewskis and 4 meals du jour. His demeanor changed significantly, and he gave me a thumbs up, which, strangely, meant exactly the same to Quinlan's as it did to me. Some mannerisms just by chance correlated. Within a couple of minutes, the others arrived. Garfield made a concerted effort to catch up with me on the beer, and Bridget got way ahead on the meal, which was a sort of pasta stuffed with fish. Because why not? I visualized myself being thoroughly sick of fish long before this was over. I pushed mine toward her as she finished hers off.
You know, she said between mouthfuls, one of the big advantages of being a replicant or running a Manny is never worrying about overeating.
She paused to savor a mouthful.
Although I used to love hot fudge sundaes. Then I ate 100 in a row in Vert because I could. I think I'm over them.
I do the same with these fish recipes, I replied, except I think I'm already there. Eventually, we finished our meals, and I signaled for another round of drinks. Careful, Bob, we don't want to run out of money. Bill gave me a glare. We can't just import more at will. We're good for a while. I'd like to avoid the short-term problem. Over the longer term, I hope we'll have some kind of contact before we run out of cash. Failing that, we will have to fly some more in, or get jobs. Bill grunted, but didn't reply. I turned to Bridget. So,
Skeeve? Multiple stab wounds, according to the doc. He wanted to know if we were related. I said yes, but not close. He didn't appear that concerned.
Skeeve probably didn't have any relatives here. He was scattered twice, remember? Garfield made a sort of exploding motion with his hands. Based on context, it looks like some kind of involuntary relocation. Skeeve may be nowhere near where he was born.
Huh.
I stared into space for a moment, thinking about that. So if someone does something to attract the administrator's attention, they get scattered, relocated, or even a whole town? But why? I guess it depends on the motivations. As in what defines uppity? Like that, yes.
Seems like an odd sort of punishment, Bill said. If that's what it is, Bridget replied, maybe the point is just to isolate troublemakers.
An uneasy silence settled over the table as we wrestled with the idea. 1 billion miles of river over which to randomly relocate someone. It made banishment to Australia look like a walk around the block. I looked up as I received a ping from my roamer. Guys, someone's broken into our apartment.
What? How do you know this?
I explained to Bill about the roamer and he made a gesture of helplessness.
Was that necessary? If we have to leave in a hurry, you won't be able to get your roamer back.
Yeah, I know. I stopped as I acquired the roamer's video stream. I expected the proprietor or maybe one of his children or something, not 4 rather ugly-looking individuals with weapons, and they aren't being subtle.
That doesn't sound like a B&E, Bridget said.
No, it looks more like a home invasion, I replied, except no one was home. Garfield swept an eye quickly around the pub. Interestingly, there are at least two individuals paying more attention to us than seems reasonable. I think we've been made. My guess would be whatever group messed up Skeeve. And who we then messed up, I replied, and who maybe want to return the favor. I don't see any other reason for them to care one way or another about us.
Unless it's the second group, they are probably not fans either.
Hmm. I nodded at Bridget's comment and carefully didn't look around the pub. Shall we go? See what happens?
Remember, no superhuman shenanigans, Bridget said.
We rose casually and headed for the door. I noticed out of the corner of my eye that several Quinlans picked that moment to leave also. Maybe coincidence? Probably not. Hey, Gar, are any of those people you noticed now suddenly leaving as well?
Yep. I predict interesting times ahead. Do we recognize any of them from yesterday?
Garfield was silent for a moment, then said,
Yes, I see one individual who was with the third group. Resistance?
Wonderful, which meant they might have more of those guns, and very probably had more bodies to throw at us. We exited the pub and turned to head back to our hotel room. I could hear feet behind us, as multiple patrons also abandoned the growling guppy.
Sounds like four sets of footsteps, Bill said.
I like those odds,
Bridget replied. We turned a corner, and my spidey sense went into overdrive. The block was deserted. I mean, really deserted. In the middle of the day. As we continued on our path, the footsteps behind us came around the corner, and at that moment, another four Quinlans stepped out of doorways ahead of us.
Wonderful. Classic encircling maneuver, Bill said.
And masterfully executed, Garfield replied. My compliments to the resistance.
And 2-1 odds are still accept. Oh, shit. I was swearing a lot lately, but it seemed appropriate. The group surrounding us had just pulled knives. Big knives. Real metal from the look of them. I think we're probably going to have to push the limits of what's possible for a Quinlan to get out of this one. Try not to cast fireballs, but almost anything else is fair game. The thugs took their time forming a circle. They grinned at us and waved their knives in a menacing manner. I wasn't sure if they were just trying for psychological advantage or wanted us to beg for our lives. Either way, they were going to be disappointed. They attacked simultaneously, jumping toward us more or less as a unit. I was impressed, despite myself. They either drilled together regularly or they'd practiced this particular maneuver. Unfortunately, they weren't dealing with real Quinlans. I slid to the outside of the nearest knife thrust, grabbed the arm, and rotated my body. My target spun around me and smacked headlong into the Quinlan beside him, but without his knife, which I'd appropriated during the maneuver. As the second attacker staggered under the impact, I smacked him on the side of the head. Punching didn't look like it would be a good idea with the Quinlans, more likely to break their haura without knocking them out, and I didn't want to do that kind of possibly permanent damage. Number two went down as number one caught his balance and turned to me. A second smack and he was down. I spun around to see how my teammates were doing. Bill and Gar had used similar tactics since we'd all taken the same self-defense courses. Bridget, however, didn't have any particular martial arts training, at least based on her fighting style, which depended mostly on enthusiasm. She finished off her two attackers, then turned to glare at us. What was that? Garfield said. Cage match, foo?
They're down, aren't they?
She replied, concentrating her glare on him. Garfield reached down and gathered the last two knives.
I think we may have a solution to our money problem. Bet these are worth mucho bucks. But not here, pretty sure. Our welcome has just worn out in Galen.
They're after us, they don't appear to be interested in talking, and I bet they'll just keep throwing more and more bodies at us.
Great, I said. I sent a silent command to my roamer to zero in on me.
Time for a swim, I guess. I opened my mouth and the roamer crawled in. Garfield groaned and cringed, and I laughed. Yep, ate a bug.
I bet you had that in mind when you designed these things, Bridget said with a head shake. Children.
Still not mature, even after 300 years, I said, grinning in reply. Okay, fun's fun. Time to go. Bill reinforced the statement by diving into the water without waiting. This was a little more work than normal because we weren't leaving from the dock. It had occurred to us that it would be an easy location to establish surveillance if there were more than the 8 thugs. With that in mind, we'd circled around to the west side of town and then simply walked away until we found an isolated beach. We dove in after Bill, skillfully avoiding the shallow bottom, and torpedoed out to mid-river where the current was swiftest. It took only a moment to link up into a Quinlan raft.
Well, that was eventful, Bridget said. We do seem to make a splash in every town.
We's rock stars, we is, Garfield muttered.
And we still haven't hit that library, Bridget reminded us.
Okay, next town we do that first thing. We should also think about trying to find the resistance. Maybe not to talk, maybe to spy on. If Skeeve was able to get in touch with them despite being in a new town, they must be either easy to locate or have lots of ears.
Yeah, talking isn't proving to be a high probability strategy, honestly, Bill replied. We'll try spying first.
Sounds good, Bridget said. Funny, despite my initial skepticism about Hugh's statistics, it looks like he was right. 2 towns in, we've contacted a group that might either know something or can point us at someone.
Garfield snickered.
Yeah, contacted. Say, which one of us has a hole in his sternum?
Bill grinned at him. Way to take one for the team. We settled into a companionable silence as the sun warmed our top halves. Insects buzzed around us and Bridget swatted at one.
Must be a heat seeker. Interesting. I'm impressed at how robust the artificial ecosystem is.
I looked around. The Arcadia River's pretty wide here and the current is slow. Let's hand off to the AMIs. They can alert us if anything requires our attention. The others made agreeing sounds and we popped back into Vert.
23. Dancing with Dragons. Bill, July 2334, Vert. 2 gamers lay dead, their smoking ruined skeletons providing perfect tripping hazards as players ran frantically back and forth. The dragon, red variety, was doing its best to immolate the rest of the dungeon party. The only thing working in our favor was that the beast seemed to want to get at least 2 targets with each flame breath. Given the required recharge time, it was a reasonable tactic.
Get under him! Hit him in the belly!
Tim the warrior yelled.
You first, asshole! Replied Vern the dwarf warlord. You're the one with the magic sword!
The dragon, an NPC known as Gar the Destroyer, roared and tried to stomp on Tim. Also a reasonable tactic. Tim was far too close to take out with fire breath, at least not without dealing itself a few hit points of damage. I had, for the moment, escaped Garg's attention, probably because I was A, by myself, and B, flat on my back, having been run over by our NPC troops when they fled in terror. I had only some crap armor and a basic sword to my name. The gamers had flat out refused to give me a higher starting level. Something about game integrity. Sure. The smoking remains of Kevin the Wise, perhaps not as wise as he thought, still had a death grip, death grip, on his former pride and joy, a staff of fireballs. Unfortunately, a staff of fireballs against a red dragon was about as useful as a harshly worded email. Now, if he'd had a staff of ice storms or something. Still, it was a valuable weapon. If I got out of this alive, it might be tradable for some enchanted armor or something. I stood, grabbed the staff, and wrenched it out of what was left of Kevin's hand.
Christ's sake, Bill, get in the game! Vern yelled. That thing's useless against a red dragon!
Garg screamed in rage and pain as one of the players managed to cut a chunk off the dragon's leg. In response, Garg temporarily abandoned his 2 targets per breath policy and gave the player, Tim, I think, the full treatment. From that range, even bones would be unlikely to survive. Tim yelled, "Aw, shit!" as he turned to Ash. Garg then went after Vern the old-fashioned way, attempting to eat him. Vern skipped back, desperately waving his battle axe. Interesting thing about dragon physiology, though, when they leaned down to bite someone, the tail went up as a counterbalance. And I discovered, from my vantage point, that the gamers had been obsessively thorough about anatomical details. I wondered for a moment if I should be watching for dragon poop. Come to think of it, though, a red dragon was probably no more flame-proof on the inside than any other animal. With that thought, I ran up behind the dragon. As a first-level grunt, I was barely worth paying attention to. Jammed the staff of fireballs right where a rectal thermometer would go, and pulled the trigger. There was a muffled whump sound. The dragon turned with a surprised look, and smoke puffed out of its ears. Then it screeched, leaped straight up, and the entire scene froze. A voice said out of thin air, "Okay, we'll need a ruling here. Is the target entitled to a saving throw?" "Are you friggin' kidding me?" Vern screamed. "How in the hell is it supposed to dodge that?" Vern and the disembodied voice began to yell insults at each other, with Vern capering around and waving his fists in the air as counterpoint. The rest of us gathered around Garg, still frozen in mid-leap, the staff right where I'd left it.
"Fried dragon on a stick," Pete said, slapping me on the shoulder. "Nice. You'll get full credit for that kill."
We'd shut down the dungeon and were relaxing in the locker room comparing notes. I wasn't sure why there was a locker room, but I figured if I could have a pub, they could have a locker room.
"They're still arguing," Gandalf said, shaking his head. "Man, you really created a shitstorm," he chuckled. "Sorry, bad choice of words."
I grinned at the rest of the dungeon party. Kevin, whose staff of fireballs was now mine, glared sullenly, then averted his eyes. Not a fan, I guess. I was going to get the entire score for the dragon unless the dissenters managed to overturn the decision and half the dragon's hoard. The combined experience points would boost me 3 levels easily, plus whatever I could get for the staff. Pretty good day overall. If only real life went that way. I motioned to Gandalf with my chin. "We should really get on with things." He nodded and popped us both into his private VR, which closely resembled Orthanc from the Peter Jackson movies, but with lazy boy couches.
"So what's your concern, Bill?"
"Honestly, Gandalf, you guys seem to have bailed on the project before you finished." He frowned.
"Interesting. Maybe we have different definitions of finished? Certainly the expedition has a long way to go, but I think we've done what we set out to do."
"Ecological and sociological surveys aren't complete. Language translation is mostly there, but still has some holes. We haven't even made a dent in mapping the Topopolis, not to mention surveys of Quinn."
Gandalf gave me a look of exaggerated patience. "A lot of that is Skippy responsibility. We've been helping, but only because it was interesting for a while. Come on, Bill, what part of volunteer aren't you grokking?"
"So as soon as it becomes less interesting, you bail?"
Gandalf thought for a moment. "Yep, pretty much." He hesitated for a moment. "Look, we're still available for specific questions, but as far as further research is concerned, I think we're tapping out. Bring us another interesting puzzle, though, and we can talk, okay?"
I sighed. Less and less Bob.
"Fine, I got it." I stood up. "Put my character on reserves, okay? I'll probably be back."
He grinned and gave me a thumbs up as I popped out.
24. Interlude. Bob. July 23, 34, Vert. Hugh sat in a beanbag chair, nursing a coffee and staring into space. I'd forwarded our logs for the last few days, and he'd immediately invited himself over.
"Tranquilizer guns, huh?"
He took a sip.
"Interesting choice of weapon."
"How so?"
"There's so many easier and less complex ways of taking out an opponent, starting with stabbing them and working up to a proper pistol with bullets. Heaven's River isn't a space station. You wouldn't have to worry about making a hole. The shell material wouldn't even notice a bullet up to a considerably larger caliber."
"Okay, anything we can learn from that?"
Assuming the gun was stolen, which is reasonable, the administrator seems to want to be careful not to kill anyone.
Hugh was silent for several moments more.
And the scattering. I think you're right about the interpretation. Again, it would be easier to just kill people.
Is it significant? Hugh opened his mouth several times to speak, then got a funny look.
Not sure. It could just be that Quinlans don't like killing each other. Except...
Yeah, Quinn. The planet.
Listen, Bob, you still have that spare Manny buried near the transit station. Have you thought about activating it and sending someone off maybe upstream?
I shook my head.
No, it's a spare, Hugh. In case we total one of ours, we need to stay a foursome. Too bad. I'd like to be able to try one out. There's still the test units on Quinn. I understand Will and Howard have been playing around with them.
And breaking them, apparently, Hugh replied. Then, at the look on my face, he added,
Oh, you didn't know. Don't let Bridget find out.
Howard broke one? Hugh's only reply was a grin. He put down his coffee cup and stood.
I got the scan done of Galentown. Nothing unusual. Right down to the limits of resolution that I had time for. In particular, no electronics or forbidden tech that I could find.
Which might mean the Resistance doesn't have it, or might mean they don't keep it in town. What about the Trank guns? Hugh shrugged.
They don't register as electronics, so I'd have to specifically scan for them. And I just didn't have time before the heatsink burned out. And for that same reason, random scanning is a non-starter. I had to retire a drone to get what I did, and I'll be shorthanded until I can fly in a replacement.
He held up a hand.
Talk later.
And popped out. On a whim, since I had some time to spare, I decided to visit Will on Valhalla. Our last meeting had ended abruptly. As soon as I received an acknowledgement, I popped over. It took only a second to unrack my Manny, and I glanced around. Instead of Will sitting in a chair, I found a 2-foot roamer waving a leg at me. The roamer began walking, then paused, significantly. Presumably it was giving me an impatient look or something, but because the devices were symmetrical, it was really hard to tell. The roamers hadn't changed that much in the 200 years since they'd been invented, at least not in principle. Lots of improvements had been made, like the Casimir power source, better materials, more compact electronics, and so on, but it was still an 8-legged general-purpose robot run by a moronic machine intelligence. I frowned in thought as I followed the device. Maybe the Skippies had the right idea. The creation of a practical AI, whether it was truly conscious or just zombie-level capable, would have a huge impact on society. Maybe even more than subspace theory and the accompanying technologies had. The roamer led me out of Will's home and down a long sequence of staircases, some constructed and some cut right out of the native stone. I was beginning to wonder if I'd misunderstood the roamer when we finally came to a flat area on the south side of the promontory on which Will's home was built. Will stood and waved to me as the roamer did an about-face and headed back to the house. With no need to allow for humanoid limitations on the return trip, the roamer was going straight up the rock face. Show off. Hey, Will, what have you got here? Will smiled and motioned to the miscellany of potted plants and plants in earthen rows. Experimental garden. I've got Terran plants and native plants here, and I'm testing for compatibility. We don't want any surprises when we start full-on agriculture. I nodded slowly. It's interesting that original Bob wasn't much of a gardener, but both you and Bill have turned into real plant specialists. Terraforming puts a whole nother spin on the problem, bud. Will motioned toward a set of Adirondack chairs near the edge of the garden area. I sat and took a moment to admire the view. Will had picked a location for his home that overlooked a huge lake surrounded by low mountains. The tree line, or whatever it was, only extended about halfway up the distant slopes, probably due to the still-too-thin atmosphere. Will followed my gaze and guessed the direction of my thoughts. The tree line is moving up the slope by several feet per year right now, and it's accelerating. By the time it stabilizes, you'll be able to see plant life all the way to the top of these mountains.
and by that point, humans will be living here without having to wear supplemental masks or live under a dome. We were silent for a few seconds while I admired the scenery. Will seemed to be content with whatever pace I set. Finally, I turned to him. Last time I was here, we were talking about Starfleet. Mostly, but there's Starfleet, the Borg, the Gamers, the Skippies. And those are just the ones that have nicknames, Will replied. The Bobiverse is going in a lot of different directions, Bob, literally and metaphorically. A lot of replicants have finally decided to take the von Neumann probe job description seriously. For instance, we've actually got a couple of thousand Bobs that are actively heading away from human space. Some are stopping and building stations. Some are just accelerating. Yeah, I examined my hands. It's just that I have a bad feeling. The Bobiverse was a post-scarcity society for a while, and a utopia, at least for most of us. But what happens to a post-scarcity society when part of the society wants power over the rest of that society? I think you end up either a dystopia or with two societies, and the transition may or may not be orderly and peaceful. Will sighed. I haven't got an answer for you, bud. We're just going to have to wait and see how far Starfleet is willing to push. I sat back and crossed my arms, glaring at the scenery without seeing it. It appeared Utopia was an unstable state. 25. Trouble Follows. Bob, July 2334, Elbow. Another day, another town. Touring with a band could be so boring. According to Garfield, anyway, he seemed to be on a rock star metaphor for some reason. We'd floated for a full day and eventually arrived at the town of Elbow. Yeah. Elbow. Didn't seem to be short for anything either. It was situated at a bend in the river, though, so maybe that? We pulled our dripping butts up onto the dock, shook off. Quinlan's did something very similar to dogs to shed water, and moseyed into town. Elbow seemed to be larger than average, with a robust performing arts subculture. Or maybe there was a festival on. It seemed like every third person was either carrying a musical instrument or dressed up like a minstrel. Or maybe a clown. It could be hard to tell. We saw at least two stages with people performing on them, and one children's theater with a Muppets kind of a thing going on. No Kermit, that would have been freaky, but the lead character did have a Fozzie-ish kind of look. I stopped to watch and got an elbow in the ribs from Bridget. Grumbling, I rejoined the group. Bridget buttonholed a couple of people and asked about a library. The second individual gave us an unnerving once-over before responding with directions. That was odd, Bill said as we continued on. Are we underdressed or something? I looked down at my naked save-for-fur body. I grinned at the answering chuckle. But I'm glad it's not just me that thought he was odd. We weren't in any particular hurry now that Bridget had her goal in sight, so to speak, so we were able to stop and watch the shows. I asked a few questions and confirmed that there was, in fact, an annual festival going on, something local, and I never got the gist of the reason for the celebration, but any reason for a party is a good reason. The singing was surprisingly good. For all their resemblance to members of the weasel and rodent families, Quinlan's had amazingly good voices and understood harmony. As for their dancing, the less said, the better. When your legs are that short, you can't really soar. I tried to be cosmopolitan and open-minded and appreciate the effort. Nope, that was just a bridge too far. Eventually, the festivities petered out as we moved from the entertainment district into what I assumed must be the business district. And a quite deserted district at that, since everyone was probably back at the party. Say, guys, Garfield said as we turned a corner. I'm looking down that block, he pointed. And we've been there.
I just did a mapping in my head, and that guy gave us really long way around directions. My spidey sense is jumping up and down and waving its arms right now. I turned, and sure enough, that was a familiar traffic island. My own spidey sense started dancing a Quinlan ballet in time to Garfield's. I turned around slowly, scanning the entire area. Bill? Bridget?
Nothing, and we're about 2 blocks away from the library, Bridget said. Maybe he only knew the one way to get there, or maybe he wanted us to see the sights. Look, I appreciate your concern, but it's closer to the library than the river, so...
Right, I replied. But let's keep our guard up until we get there. We continued on our route, but without any of the previous sightseeing activity. Every sense was tuned, every reflex on hair trigger. If someone had innocently popped out of a doorway at that point, they might have met an unfortunate end. Bridget halted abruptly, and Bill almost walked into her.
What do you guys always call it? Spidey sense?
She motioned to the square ahead of us where an ornately official building sported a large sign that translated as Sanctuary of the Written Word. What is it, Bridge? There were a couple of people talking outside the door of the library, but I couldn't see anything else.
I'm not sure. One of those guys there started to turn toward us, then aborted the move with a jerk, like someone who'd just been told, "Don't look, you idiot."
We stood in one spot for several seconds, indecisive. Then Bill said, "So let's see what happens if we try to leave." With that, he wheeled and strode off. The rest of us looked at each other briefly, then turned and followed him. And all hell broke loose. There was a shout behind us, followed immediately by an answering call. Out of doorways and alleys, more than a dozen Quinlans emerged at full gallop. And I do mean gallop. They were on all fours, a much quicker mode of travel. And they were carrying swords in their mouths, pirate style. Uh-oh, I don't think this is the welcome wagon. Time to be elsewhere.
Thanks, Bob, for that insightful analysis, Bridget said. Now move your ass or get out of my way.
Without waiting for me to make up my mind, she shot past me, heading for the dock. The direct way, too. Apparently, she'd checked Garfield's map. And, no surprise, the welcome wagon had thought we might do that. 6 more Quinlans appeared in front of us, sporting either very large knives or short swords. I wasn't inclined to stop and take a measurement, and 3 of them had what appeared to be holstered pistols. Trank guns? I jacked slightly. Not enough to lose connection with the Manny, but enough to have time for a conversation. The others synced automatically. How many?
I saw 6 in front and 12 behind. Some of the ones in front have trank guns.
14 behind, Garfield said, correcting Bridget's assessment. Big gap to the left. We could make for that. This is a well-planned hit, Bob. They left a big gap to a whole street by accident? I don't think so. Bill was right. Good point. Let's not go that way. We're not going to go through them. Not with those pig stickers, Garfield said.
It may be time to loosen up on the no impossible moves rule. I don't want to end up as sushi.
For Bridget, that was a significant concession. Or gift wrapped. Agreed, Bill added. Let's go through the 6 in front, full gonzo. I received 3 acts and shifted my Manny into overdrive. Not that it turned into a transformer or anything, but the internal power supply jacked up to full output. All internal nanites deployed for possible damage, and fake blood circulation was increased to handle the higher cooling requirements. There would need to be some maintenance done later. The scene slowed in my visual field, and I took the time to estimate angles and distances. Garfield and Bridget had already picked lines that would take them either around or through the defensive ends, so I was going to have to go through the middle of the line. I glanced at Bill, who seemed to have the same idea as me. We ran straight at the line, accelerating as only a mechanical otter can, then went down on all fours as we came to just outside of weapon range. As expected, the Quinlans aimed their stabby things downward at us. We leaped and sailed right over them. Quinlans can jump, of course, but not like this. In Quinlan terms, this wasn't quite like doing a pole vault without the pole, but it would definitely be a record-breaking high jump, and long jump, and sprint. We hit the ground just as Garfield and Bridget came around the ends of the line, having straight-armed their opponents as they stopped to look up. They dropped to all fours. Our afterburners cut in, and we disappeared down the street faster than they could possibly keep up with. A couple of pings off nearby walls led me to believe that at least one of them was now shooting at us as well.
There was a brief, astonished silence behind us, which was good. Then a bunch of shouted warnings, which was bad. They weren't shouting at each other. This was shouting directed at someone far away. I had a bad feeling we weren't done. Detour, guys, the direct route is booby-trapped or staked out or something. Three acts. No one was sparing energy for speeches. We made an abrupt left at the next intersection, still setting a pace that would make a Quinlan Olympian quit in despair, assuming they had Olympics. More shouts. We'd piss them off, at least. To the left, up there, Bill said. I looked in the indicated direction. Huh, not bad. A three-story building with a flat roof and a reasonable climbing route, if you're into parkour. It would be fair to say that Quinlans are not climbers, and it would not occur to them that we might climb drain pipes and hop roofs. Bill led, we followed. Mechanical muscles and computer reflexes ensured no oopsies, and in seconds we were lying flat on top of a roof. There was a short barrier wall around the edges, more likely for aesthetics, as I couldn't see it being of any practical benefit. I opened my mouth, spit out a roamer, and set it on top of the wall. The others did the same, and in moments, we had four video windows hanging in our heads-up displays while we lay out of sight. Our pursuers came into view in a ragtag mob. They had clearly not planned for this eventuality. Some were checking doors and alleys, others were running back and forth on all fours. I could see five Trank guns being carried in plain view. Then one of the group called out, and the others gathered around her. I tagged her as a probable leader and made sure I got a close-up image. The group had a conversation that we couldn't make out, or maybe argument would be a better term. There was a lot of arm waving and interrupting, and one attempted bite. But eventually they settled on a plan. A couple of Quinlans took up positions in the shadows where they could keep an eye on the street, while the rest marched off the way they'd come. "Looks like we're going to be here a while," Bill noted. "I need a coffee," I added. Leaving the Manny's AMIs on sentry, we all popped into my VR and grabbed our favorite seating. I pulled up the four video windows from our surveillance roamers and put them on the wall. Bill leaned forward and made a point of making eye contact with each of us. "I guess the first question we need to deal with is how they knew we were coming." "That's got some assumptions in there."
"Reasonable ones. We didn't do anything to attract attention in Elbow, like peeking into a cart."
Bridget gave me the sideways eye.
"One friggin' mistake."
"Good point, though. This had the smell of setup right from when we asked." Garfield stopped abruptly and stared into space, his eyes growing slowly wider.
"What? What?"
We all knew that facial expression. It was the light bulb look. Instead of answering, Garfield pulled up another video showing our encounter with the helpful citizen who had given us directions. He paused the video, then pulled up another video from our subsequent encounter. He fast